Off the ball
on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, Shirai, welcome. 53106, the text number here. If you want to get in touch, you can tweet the show at Off the Ball. Brian Driscoll, good evening to you.
Good evening.
You're not as formally attired as last I saw you on our TV screens with the shiny green tie.
No, I'm not. And this is my outfit for tonight. I was meant to get home. I was London last night, and 2 hour delay in city airport, as you always get. It's one thing about city airport, it's nice and close to town, but there's so many delays. So then I didn't get a chance to go home. So I am doing the Johnny Waft out tonight to LCD sound system.
It's been a busy week.
It has, yeah, it has. Lots gotten through a lot since, since this time last week. Lots of rehearsals, and then obviously the presentation itself on Monday, and then the aftermath, and even the questions, you know, yep. Meeting people in the street, and the subsequent feeling about it, everyone asking, so do we actually have a great chance, or what is it, or what's your take on it?
Yeah.
So it's been pretty topical.
They're good questions. What is it? What's our chance? What do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. Like, what I will say is that, so I've been involved with it for about 2 years, and I've sat on the board and I've listened an awful lot. I haven't said a huge amount. I suppose I've had some small inputs, and I realise I'm there for a particular role as well. When it comes to, you know, the publicity side of things, and then obviously, you know, my role at the weekend being the BID ambassador. The one thing we can say, having delivered on Monday, is that we have thrown the kitchen sink at it. We have done everything we possibly can. Both governments, the IRFU, Philip Brown was absolutely exceptional on Monday. With regard to the fastidiousness of the detail in which we've gone to, all the best experts have been drafted in. They haven't penny pinched. So we've given it as good a shot as we can. So if we aren't picked for whatever reason, you can hold your hands up. We'll be devastated, but we have thrown everything at it.
So on Monday, the presentation's made. What is your actual involvement on the day? Because obviously we see the press conference afterwards, really.
Yeah. So I'll give you a bit of a weekend run. So we had rehearsals on Saturday afternoon. Taoiseach gave us 2 hours of his time as well, came in. So we rattled through it, and then we flew first thing Sunday morning. Thought that was a little excessive to be getting on the 7:30 on Sunday, considering we had the whole day. Anyway, maybe that's actually where they did penny pinch. Maybe they were cheaper flights at 7:30. It got me thinking. So we went in, did more rehearsals straight away on the Sunday morning in our hotel, and then had lunch, and then went to the hotel in Kensington and rehearsed properly in the room.
Right.
So there was five speakers. There was Philip Brown, who led it. Dick Spring, chairman, introduced it. Philip Brown. Then I spoke after that. In between, so there was a video before me, the Niamh Briggs one, and then there was the another one.
Bob Geldof
after me. No, that's introduced later on. Why am I? I didn't introduce the Niamh Briggs one. Yeah, no, maybe. I didn't introduce the Geldof one. Was there a third video? Oh, there was, the stadium one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's three videos. So then David Stirling, who's head of civil service up north, was representing, I suppose, the politicians that aren't in situ there.
Yeah.
And he was speaking about how the one thing that they are agreed upon up north, even though they're having difficulties of their own, is that we want to host this Rugby World Cup, and they're fully united behind it. And then Kieran McLaughlin from the Ireland Funds got up and spoke, talked about the diaspora and the reach, in particularly in North America, that we can take advantage of because of the 70 million Irish around the world. He spoke fantastically well. And then the Taoiseach spoke after that, and then Philip summed it all up, and then there was some questions and answers, which again Philip Brown took an awful lot of those himself, and he was really top class. top class. Like the first answer, everyone was just kind of looking at him. His knowledge of stats and all of the detail that he needed to know, it banged of someone that had done an insane amount of research and knew exactly what he had to deliver. And it wasn't just churning out and nonsense behind it. He was very specific with hitting targets that the question they were looking for.
Yeah, because that, like, so the South Africans and the French came with bigger numbers at this point, kind of like, oh, from my back pocket, I magically have found this extra cash down the back of my, and maybe it's believable. I mean, it probably isn't believable, but it's like, it's you go big with those things at the last minute, and that's the worry, really. Mm. But if you've got facts to back up everything, like it sounds like Philip Brown had, then that lends that credibility to our bid. The other bids have had their difficulties the whole way along.
Yeah, if you remember too, and people aren't aware of this, the World Rugby hasn't always gone for the biggest offer in the past. So that's not the be-all and end-all. There's lots of components to this.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, growing the game is one aspect, and I suppose we're trying to sell that. Equally, France and South Africa will be selling the fact that they've hosted it before and it's been a success. So depends on what way you're looking at it. But there are lots of components to any bid process about filling stadia, about growing the game, about the memories that you'll be able to create, proximity of team bases to stadia, and that's one of the strengths of us. Our stadia are right in the city, towns and city centres. You don't have to jump on a train and, you know, for an hour out and an hour back, and you lose the momentum of a night huge atmosphere, and then all of a sudden it's dead by the time you get back into town. That's not going to be the case with us. So I think we had to project all the real positives that we had on our side, as much as the other two nations were doing likewise. But I feel our overall offering is incredibly competitive, and the overall financial package, only World Rugby will truly know that.
And how important that is, yeah.
And how, yeah.
Obviously, it's massively important.
It is very important because 90% of what they do over the course of the 4 years comes from the Rugby World Cup. So, yes, they can't get it wrong, but they won't get it wrong with Ireland. We will totally embrace this, and it'll be a World Cup as I don't even know it was an intentional line, but a World Cup like no other. It really won't be. We won't be trying to imitate anything. We'll be doing our own thing.
Yeah.
And I've seen in the past how Ireland reacts to having big sporting events or big events by our standards here, and how much the whole country weighs in behind it.
There's a lot to be said for that, because the Euros obviously in 2020 are going to end up being in cities, and so there's this sense that actually it's going to be a good opportunity for a city like Dublin, which can never host a major football tournament, to have three or four games or three games as it is. And that's great, but actually having everybody come to a country and live in there for 3 or 4 weeks while a tournament is on, it's a really special thing for sports fans. And as rugby continues to grow, these World Cups are going to get better and better.
Yeah, I suppose you look at comparatively and economies, and I'm no economist and I'm no politician, but you look comparatively to the setup in New Zealand in 2011 and what we can deliver.
Yeah.
We can comfortably deliver that and more. And yes, it'll be 12 years on from that, and the expectation will be greater. But if you look at all the team bases that we looked at, and there's always question marks about, have we got the hotels? Have we got the infrastructure? Have you got the team bases to be able to support all of this? So we needed 45 team bases. We've actually identified 80.
Right.
And they'll comfortably fit the standards they're looking for. It's not just us going, oh yeah, those 80 will be grand. There's a particular remit on each of these.
And could the All Blacks stay
and
here?
Small things. And so what I can add is tell them, last thing a player wants to do is be getting on a bus after training. Probably don't share. Just get straight on the bus, go back to the hotel, be on that for 40, 45 minutes. I've done that in other countries, at other World Cups. Absolutely. So everything is under 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So those small aspects all add up to just a better experience for the player, and the knock-on effect, will be positivity from their performance and them enjoying themselves. And then when you do that, you play your better rugby.
It's kind of a weird enough situation when this all happens on the day and then you finish and you don't get to find out whether or not there's a result straight away. It's like, well, a couple of weeks' time, another month. A bit of an anticlimax at the end?
Yeah, a bit, because you're, we got to do a great job. We pitched hard and we, you know, we're very happy with it.
How'd we do?
And now we just have to wait, you know, a month till the 31st of October for World Rugby to then decide which of the presentations they felt fits best for them to push one name in front of another. This is a new process as well. This hasn't been done before. So we don't really know how that's going to pan out, whether they're going to go, we liked you all. You were all very good. So you're all exactly equal over two council members, or whether they go and
make a recommendation.
And, and this is done, the system it's done with, I don't know the ins and outs of it. So, you know, whether it'll be, there'll be a stark difference between A, B or C, I really don't know.
And I guess nobody does. The point is, it's, there's supposed to be a recommendation. It's supposed to have been more transparent to try and avoid the controversies that other governing bodies have had.
But then at the same time, you know, you could look at it one another way of, do these council members want their hand forced, you know, by this recommendation? Will it be difficult to go against the recommendation?
Yeah.
Possibly. So has there been horse trading done in the past with other World Cups? Undoubtedly. Are those favours still owed? Maybe, hopefully, who knows? I don't know. It's that's definitely beyond my input into this board.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of politics still to go over the course of the next 6 weeks, and particularly when that decision comes out on October 31st. It's strange that it then isn't decided until the 15th of November, so that leaves 2 weeks of lots of phone calls or people going out and really, going hard after votes.
And then
after it all, sorry to interrupt you, after it all, unions could decide that, we're going to go for Ireland or we're going to go for South Africa, and then it's up to that individual who cast the vote. So it's a blind ballot.
To put it in.
It's a blind ballot.
Right.
So it's still down to those 39? Not sure exactly how many council members.
Yeah,
39 votes, I think. But so it's I don't know.
It's
imperfect, but it's imperfect for everyone.
And who does that politicking at that point? Like, is that the IRFU?
John O'Driscoll is our council member, and Pa Whelan. But to be honest with you, they obviously are in the inner sanctum.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Kevin Potts and Philip Brown went off to Argentina yesterday to try and garner their votes.
Okay.
Gus Pichot down there, and chat to him and tell, you know,
we agree with your residency rule.
How much he loves. Yeah, exactly. Well done on those 5 year.
It's great.
You love Ireland, Gus, don't you?
Yeah.
You have such great memories.
Yeah.
So, it is. You just have to try and keep pushing and staying on people. And
does everybody go out afterwards and have a few drinks and enjoy themselves? Or is it like, after what just happened
on Monday? No. It was home afterwards. I didn't even realise until that morning that John Schmidt was there. They had two World Cup winning captains. Pretty impressive. Us, not so many World Cup winning captains. But I was going to catch up with him afterwards, but we were kind of passing ships.
Yeah.
So we just came home that afternoon, and we had a good dinner the night before. The board members were all flown over, so it was sort of their work is done, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a number of years, so it was good to kind of have everyone in a room together and have dinner.
Yeah, I'd say it was a bit nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it was, because you can't get it wrong, too. And to be honest with you, we all had our good moments in rehearsals, and someone might have, you know, had a bit substandard. But everyone got it right on the day.
Yeah.
Everyone was very good. And some people, I think, like I said, I can't speak highly enough of Philip Brown. I thought he killed it. And having the wow factor of having the Taoiseach there was pretty cool too.
Who decided on the green ties? What was the...
They're a nice colour green, weren't they? Tasteful green.
Definitely.
I saw them and I put, need to put your shades on immediately. They're like translucent green. But anyway, but even the small detail of, you know, our tie pins and stuff, just really cool touches.
Yeah.
We've given it a good go.
All right, well, we'll keep a watching brief to see what happens on that. There's some other stuff that we want to talk about. We'll talk about Sean O'Brien in a moment, but Leinster have got their big guns back and kicking off pretty soon this evening. The league really needed them to lose last week.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
and
it did.
It's actually really good for rugby generally that happened.
It absolutely is. Because the Cheetahs have gone and beaten Zebre the week before in that like 90 pointer. And if Zebre are scoring 37 or 39 points against you, I kind of thought, oh gosh, what are Leinster capable of doing?
Yeah.
So then when that happened, you are split because, my club is Leinster, but then I knew the competition did need that. And for a big team like Leinster going down and losing, it shakes things up and they'll get more respect down there as a result. I did think that they were going to be a different proposition down there, and they will. They'll remain a home and away team. They'll be beaten most of the time away from home, and I think they'll win most games at home.
Yeah, I think that if Leinster had gone...
right?
Yeah.
Away, lose most away,
And win their home ones.
Yeah.
If Leinster had gone down and absolutely annihilated them, like the bad start would have continued and the bad mood music around the competition would have continued. Whereas this kind of eases the pressure a little bit and everybody goes, all right, well, we'll ease off now and we can actually have conversations about the rugby as opposed to, oh, what is this?
Yeah, I suppose I don't want to take anything away from their victory, but you do look at that Leinster team and the reality is that if you're picking it for Europe, two of them definitely start and probably a third in Jack Conan.
Yeah.
So Issa, Josh van der Vlier and Jack Conan. And then even Josh van der Vlier, if Jordy Murphy plays well, he might be on the bench. So there's not a lot of starters there. But they still would have fancied their chances. They still would have thought we have enough here. And they got physically pushed around the place. They got beaten up in collisions, particularly in defence. I've never seen Leinster's defence since Stuart Lancaster come in soaking so much. There was no aggressive collisions. It was all about these big South African ball carriers. They knew, maybe it's the template of how to beat Leinster. Big, huge men carrying direct and very simple. And don't try and overthink your game plan. We're coming at you very much South African mindset, and if you can't handle us, we're going to keep on coming. And if we need to change to plan B, it's more of the same.
Yeah. The bigger guys on the bench who can't last the full 80 minutes. The team that Leinster have named obviously tonight has a bunch of the Lions back. Sexton is captain. Sean O'Brien is starting at 8. It's got Jack McGrath and Tadhg Furlong in the front row as well, alongside Sean Cronin. So we're kind of ramping up to that stage of the season now where these games begin to matter for the individuals, because the much bigger games are coming, the November Internationals and the European Cup. And then also for the team to start finding some form and showing exactly what this season is going to be like.
And combinations. You have to have combinations. So front row, for instance, the boys haven't played together since the semi-final. So they need to just, there's only so much they can learn from a technique point of view of just getting back into sync at training. They've got to play games together. Second row pairing of Fardy and Dev just need to knit down, even again with their set piece with scrum, and then who knows what's going to happen in that back row. I think it's again very exciting, and even with Jamie Heaslip sidelined for what now appears to be a number of months, you still have a wealth of Reese and Jordy Murphy, Sean, Dan Levy when he's back, Josh van der Vlier, probably six very good players for three positions. So you need all those combinations working together by the time you get into Europe, because a side like Montpellier, I think we'll see a very different Montpellier than the one that was here last year.
Yeah. You mentioned Sean O'Brien there, been in the news recently. We haven't talked to you since he named names.
Yeah.
It's very unusual for anybody to name names and single out individuals.
It is. It's not really the done thing. I suppose two things. I think you don't want to shy away from players and having a good level of honesty, because we give out about them being dull and offering nothing from a soundbite point of view. And I was very much part of that crew, because you represent a team and you don't want to give anyone opportunity to come back at you. So for him, his honesty in doing that, I applaud him. At the same time, what was in it from a selfish point of view, what was in it for Sean O'Brien? I don't know what win he gets out of that. There's nothing other than antagonising the coaches that were involved. He could have privately said those things and gotten, you know, and aired his grievances to the management, to the Lions board or whatever on the QT, and the point would still have been, would it still hit home. But to do it publicly, he's drawn all this heat on himself. He's, you know, now persona non grata in Wales because he's had a go at their head coach and Rob Howley. He's probably created an awkward situation any time he bumps into the either those two coaches going forward, of which will happen regularly.
Yeah.
So
it's going to happen on the field as well.
I just don't see where the win in all of that is.
So what? Why do you think he did it then?
I think he might have just. He did it down in the Ploughing Championships, didn't he? Like, I think he might have. I wonder, did he just get caught in the environment of where he was at Asher? It's just two guys having a conversation, and whether he spilled his guts out, not anticipating it to go as big as it did. It, I suppose, the speed at which it moved is a credit to the interviewer and the station that managed to get the interview, because lots of people picked up on it immediately. And I, you know, before I was kind of wondering when he did this interview, having seen articles written later on that evening, and it was just off the back of the show coming out at 7 o'clock and Off the Ball, and the next thing, an hour and a half later, so you know the English writers were
the
on
Telegraph,
it, and
yeah.
They were the Telegraph, and you know they were. I suppose there were strong quotes as well.
That's it.
It wasn't as though he sugarcoated them. He.
And it wasn't like coaches. It was Rob Howley.
Yeah.
And so to deal with the meat of what he said, it is pretty interesting that, like, maybe it's afterwards as well. You kind of feel in retrospect we screwed that up in week one.
I also think he's a small bit deluded with we should have won a 3-0. Like, New Zealand will be sick at not having won that series.
Yeah.
Like, the Lions led for 3 minutes of the whole series. They butchered two gilt-edged chances in the third test to put a completely different complexion on that game and relax them their way into it.
Yeah.
As a result, they didn't score them. Julian Sevilla hasn't played for the All Blacks again since, and you know has been cast aside. You don't drop those balls in crucial games, and they tightened up, but it was very un-All Black like. It was maybe the All Blacks of 10 years ago, but not the current
crop. They'd actually got it
over
the line.
Yeah, yeah.
So the training thing and the having difficulty expressing his message and the fact that the two out halves end up running training, in some respects, isn't that kind of what you want? You do want your out halves to be running training, but...
Yeah, I suppose it's difficult for... When the two are picked in the same team, it's miles easier to run a session when you're in the starting 15 than it is when you're in the 23. So very difficult for Johnny Sexton to do anything in week one being, you know, numbered 16 to 23. It's very hard to, you know, speak up. You try and throw your Tuppenceworth in, but you've got to leave it to the players that are going to actually be doing it or starting for the first 50 or 60 minutes.
Otherwise, people start looking at you weird. Bit weird.
Yes, yeah, like, all right, you know, we're the ones, we're playing, you know.
We
hear you, but yeah, we're going to do it this way. So it's difficult. So obviously when you get selected and they change tack of playing himself and Farrell together, you're in a position to be able to drive it an awful lot more. Now, I wasn't privy to what was going on. I have a lot of time for Rob Howley as a coach. I was coached by him in 2009 and 2013. I think he's got some brilliant ideas. I don't know whether he struggled to verbalise what he was trying to get across or not. I wasn't involved in that. So I was a little bit surprised that was the case. That was Sean naming him as a semi-disappointment.
Yeah.
Because I think he's done a good job on previous Lions tours, and he's been getting a little bit of heat in the Welsh media in recent years.
He has,
kind of a few question marks over too. So I suppose this won't have helped Rob Howley, but I always thought he was a good coach.
The fact that Sean O'Brien is 30, he'll be 34 at the time of the next tour. Does he feel like he doesn't have a chance of going on the next Lions tour, or does he think, actually, I've got every chance of going on the Lions tour, I want to make sure it's perfect the next time?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely the latter.
Yeah,
I don't think he's thinking, oh no, I'm done with two tours,
so I can start talking openly about it.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, okay. No. He's thinking that was born out of frustration that he genuinely thought they should have won the series 3-0. Even, do you know what? They had a chance of course they had a chance of winning the series. They drew it. But the reality is,
it was New Zealand who were attacking at the last minute, though.
Yeah, it was. Like, and it was a really good draw for the Lions.
Yeah.
And not a good draw for the All Blacks. That's how I would look on it.
And so can he make peace now with Gatland?
I think you just have to hold your hands up. The problem is, you can make peace, all right, but when you say those things,
and you can't take them.
Yeah, you can't take them back, because you question the individual. Why did you make them in the first place? So he's got to stand by them, and it's not nice to hear that as a coach.
I'm sure it's...
But it's the manner in which they were delivered, I think, will be frustrating. And he can try and sort that out and apologise for that. If he's spoken to Gatland or Rob Howley, and relations will be okay, but I don't think they're ever going to be great mates. I don't think there'll be Christmas cards for them.
Hey. Will it be mentioned in the pre-match talk the next time Ireland play Wales?
I don't know. Maybe by the players. Maybe, yeah. Don't you know it?
Let's do it.
If
for
you
Rob
read,
Howley.
Yeah, maybe a bit of that. But it's a lot of rugby to be played from now to Six Nations against Wales back here, but. It adds it an extra little bit of spice, another dimension for the media, for the writers out there that have to fill their column inches that week. It'll just make things a little bit easier for them.
Yeah, for sure. And he's probably going to have quite a big season if he stays injury free. The form that he showed against the All Blacks was the best form of his life.
Yeah, he was in phenomenal condition and he played some brilliant rugby. But his issue has always been, can he stay there for a full season? Can he avoid those kind of 5-6 week layoffs that he's had over the course of his career?
All right, we've got to take a quick break. 53106 is the text number here. If you want to get in touch, Brian, staying with us, you can tweet us here at Off the Ball. We're going to talk about Connacht and Munster. And some more interview stuff right after these.
Off the Ball
on News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
All right, you're very welcome back. Brian O'Driscoll is with us this Friday evening. People are getting in touch about the stuff that we've been talking about. I did want to ask you about the Graham Simmons, Kieran Keane interview. I don't know if you saw this.
Yeah, I did.
Sky,
yeah, I did.
So this divided opinion. Dave, unfortunately, isn't here with us. Dave thought that the Connacht coach should just take his soup and understand that you've got to deal with this stuff. I just thought the first two questions were ridiculous. I thought they were outrageous.
The fit to spit.
What does it even mean?
But he's just trying to be quirky, isn't he? That's Graham Simmons, you know, trying to... What was the second... That was second one, for spit, fit
ticking,
to spit.
Ticking.
Yeah.
Are you ticking? I'm like, shut up. What are you doing?
I don't think that was too bad, because he's just trying to have a point of difference, and that's him. As I did hear someone saying on the show the other day, he's the guy that hugged Simon Shaw after the second test. So, like...
Come on.
You are getting that with Graham Simmons, but I thought he actually... managed in the interview. Like, that is an inexperienced interviewer's nightmare.
Yes.
If you're not prepped on someone giving you something back. And I thought he actually managed to turn something around and create it into an interview that wasn't car crash.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
It was close. I was looking forward to seeing how it was going rather than watching through half an eye.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess Kieran Keane was obviously very pissed off. It's the second week in a row his team have not lived up to what they were capable of doing. And maybe the next time he'll be asked a question about the rugby at the start as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, so he was bullying going into it and he just needed a straight question.
Yeah.
And that's why by the sense of things,
tonight?
Yeah. So you must be disappointed. Yes, I am. So it just antagonized him a little bit more, because maybe... He probably didn't understand what he was saying, but I don't think he was trying to understand either.
Yeah,
you know?
It did take me a couple of minutes.
Come on.
Fit to spit. Are you fit to spit?
Yeah,
spit,
but like, I don't know. I've never heard it. I've never heard of that before, but like, fit to spit, I guess. Is that a good thing? Am I delighted with life? No, okay. It's not. I've just lost a game. I think, you know, I can put two and two together.
Yeah.
So, he
was being uncooperative. He was
being uncooperative.
It's
he was. Yeah. And... And then he grew into it. I think he realized this hasn't gone well and this is being recorded.
Yeah.
So he started giving a small bit more towards the end, and I heard Gavin Comiskey saying that he had a little bit more for the dailies, for newspapers when he went into the press conference. So maybe he'd cool down at that stage. But that's why you get coaches soon after games, because they're...
That's when you might get something out of them.
Yeah, because they've got steam coming out their ears, and that's where you want some gold.
Yeah, I think they should continue to do these.
If it was mundane and level the whole time, no one would watch those.
Yeah.
I watched that because I'd heard it, or it was on social media, and I thought, I'll give this a go. There's something in it.
What do you make of him so far, Keane?
I haven't seen, I've watched Connacht, but I don't know him or his style. He's slightly modifying what Pat Lam has brought to them. I think, I don't think he has quite the same group of players that Pat Lam had a couple of seasons ago when they won the Pro 12, as it was. And he's obviously trying to put his own stamp on things. And it must be incredibly frustrating when you come in and you've inherited a team that's improved a lot, and then immediately after four games, there's huge pressure on you because you haven't gotten the results.
Yeah.
You want to keep going with the ideas and the shape and everything that you think is going to be a winning formula, but you just need those wins, those 50-50, those close calls. You need to get one or two of those to get people off your back, because you know, they've got a nasty enough leading of games now. They've got Ulster away, they've got Scarlets away, and then into Europe. So, like, possibility of losing five of the first six games, that's tough for any coach.
It is, yeah. And especially...
No matter what reputation you come with, or how much people think, oh, it'll take a little bit of time, the expectation now in Connacht is to be a top six team, to be in Europe. And he needs to deliver
around.
This, not in year two or year three. He needs to deliver that in year one.
The situation in Munster, obviously, it had been reported earlier on in the week that there was going to be an announcement made on the director of rugby gig. Gerry Thorney today is reporting that Johan van Graan is the new Munster director of rugby. Still waiting for Munster to officially confirm this. He's worked with the forwards at the Springboks. He is currently the assistant coach of the Springboks and is going to take over from Razzy Erasmus. Never been a head coach before and is only 36, so it's a big risk.
It seems like
it's kind of... It was two largely unheralded characters they were going for, which might be the right way about going stuff if you have inside information about the quality.
So there has to be that, right? So there's that. So Razzy's obviously giving them a proper steer. This guy, for whatever reason, wants away from South African rugby. As Rassi's going into it, this guy wants away from it, wants to now see himself as a number one guy. He's been assistant for a while. I saw the comments that Heineke Mayer said about this, the detail that this guy has gone into in the past, putting together strategy and game plans with South Africa. He brought him in, he took a big risk on him, but he said a risk that's really paid off. So a high calibre coach like him, speak very highly of him. Rassi's not going to let him go into Munster if he isn't a top quality individual and could do great things. So I think maybe it's a Michael Checa type character. He's even got more on his CV than Michael Checa did when he came in. He came via Randwick.
Yeah.
So this guy has been under the radar, but obviously he's very highly thought of. So maybe he'll be a great fit and picking up, works along the same philosophies as Rassi, so the transition will actually be more seamless because they're similar in personality. So I'll be interested to see what ideas he has and whether they are in alignment with Rassi.
Yeah, you would assume that they have to be very close to them because the Munster group of players is now at that level where they're... The key leaders are aged between 26 and 29 and they're coming off successful Lions tours and playing really well for Ireland. And their expectation is now that they will be reaching semi-finals in Europe and finals of domestic competition. And they had just re-established their identity under Rassi. So it sounds like they are going to be very important in deciding what the style of play is going to be and what the standards are going to be set. So, maybe a young head coach is actually exactly what they need.
Yeah. the best teams are the ones that are, you know, are driven by their senior players. You look at all the successful teams. You go back to England, 2003, the New Zealand team that managed to get the World Cup done after all the disappointment. The Wasps team, you know, under McGeachan and Gatz. The European teams under Declan Kidney and Dana Munster, they're largely player driven. Not to say that there wasn't good coaching in aspects that was added to that pot, but you have to have key individuals because driving it, because you're the ones that are making the decisions out in the pitch.
Yeah.
You can't have a coach hold your hand out there. So, yes, it is a big year for Conor Murray and for CJ and for Pete. O'Mahony, for Zeebo, because now they're not the young lads anymore. You get away with so much as a young lad. It's like, oh, he's a bit wild or he's a bit loose in this aspect of his game. Now they really have to start driving that ship. And I think as well with bringing a new coach in, he's got to love the ideas of what Rassie's doing because it's mid-season. You can't change your policy halfway through, you know, before rounds 5 and 6 of Europe. It's got to be seamless.
Yeah, I presume Rassie picks him because he's cut from the same cloth.
I don't know. Like, I don't know anything about this guy, so
yeah,
he must like him. Rassie seems, I don't know Rassie particularly well. I've met him and what I read about him and how I see him talk in post-match interviews. He's an impressive person. Listening to the lads, they really like him. So you just have to, I'd say they're going to take a big punt on his interpretation of what this guy is going to be like and how he'll be a good fit for Munster.
Yeah.
That's what criteria do you pick a coach, you know, when you don't have everyone to pick from? Because we have to remember too, this is the middle of the season. Don't have, you know, a lead in time where it's pre-season 6 months out and, you know, you've got the pick of the crop.
Yeah, which was kind of the point of the whole 6 month notice period. It was
loads of time, but you don't, but you're in the middle of a season still and coaches aren't out of contract. So it's a bad time to...
That whole notice period thing didn't work out the way it was intended to, right?
But it's never going to. It was an imperfect time for Rassie to tell them that he was going back to South Africa. The time to do that is at Christmas time.
And say,
where you can go, all right, we've 6 months now to the start of a new season.
Yeah.
And where... Because you have to remember, coaches along with players are contracted June to June.
Yeah.
So a coach comes out of contract or they have the ability to be able to make a decision over that 6 month period where they move their family, their kids' schools, all of that side of things as well. That all becomes, coaches are humans.
Yes.
So they've got wives and partners at home that have to be kept happy too.
You've presumed David Nusafora is really important in all this and that he's actually the guiding hand behind these decisions, or do Munster have the freedom to appoint their own coach? Like, I don't really understand how the relationship works.
I don't fully understand that either. I would imagine that it needs sign off from Nusafora, but I'd say Munster are driving that very much themselves, because they've got to, you know, they've got to make it work for what fits within their identity and their culture, yeah, rather than the IRFU's culture. I'm not saying it's vastly different, but Nusafora would, I'm sure, be kept in the loop, but I would think very much their own decision.
Because we've heard loads about how much of a leap Felix Jones and Flannery have made in that coaching ticket.
Mm.
And that's great. We could do with a few more.
And on that point, up to last weekend, it was I think you have to write off that game last weekend. They were poor against Glasgow and they did meet a very, very good Glasgow team. I think they're the team to beat in the Pro 14 this year. But I had been very impressed with Munster's skill level. And you can see that Felix has come in and had an immediate impact with them. Their passing game is miles better. Their little tip-ons, they're growing their game. They're evolving way more than the obviously the expectation of being good at maul and at set piece, both attack and defence. But I think that it's their skill level that has improved massively.
Yeah.
That I think it has been an aspect that's been grown onto their game over the last 3 or 4 months, for sure.
When you talk to them as well, the point that they make is that they make a mistake now, and it's a mistake. If it's an effort mistake, you get kind of burned out, and it's like, you're not welcome here. But if you make a mistake that you're trying something, they're like, try and fix it. It's not like an absolute pummeling on the Monday morning. So they've started to become more expressive, and they've started to believe in themselves a good bit more. And you can see that this is a team that is ready to take that next step.
Yeah, yeah. I think just without being negative about it, what will disappoint them from last weekend. So Leonardo Sarto came on after 2 minutes and scored a try pretty quickly. He kind of hitch-kicked and got Sweetenham on the outside, who'd be disappointed. But in the second half, one of their second rows scored a try, and he made a break, and he looked like Mr. Incredible in it. There must have been 5-6 guys falling off tackles. That's the sort of stuff that will piss any coach off.
Yeah. And that's where
get hammered for that. Whereas making passes that don't quite stick, or trying to go for a 50-50 offload, because that's growing your game.
Yeah.
And that eventually will get better, because more of them will stick the more you try them and more you practice them. But it was just a day that not a whole lot went for them. And I think you have to look at it and see where you went wrong, but just park it and move on to the next game.
All right, good stuff. Enjoy LCD sound system.
I shall.
Off the ball. On News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.